Not only what's going on in our nation's capital right now with the confirmation hearings for Judge Brown Jackson, it's raising all types of thoughts and feelings for myself, me being a Black woman, just a few years older than Judge Brown Jackson. And the way things are going on at that confirmation hearing, the way it went. So I started to reflect on my own experience. And as a Black woman, I haven't had access to the buildings. Many of my ancestors, many of Miss Brown Jackson's ancestors, and many, many of Black women that came before us did not have the privilege to access buildings, certain facilities. And the Civil Rights Act of 1964 slowly started to help make some changes. And if you've heard my journey before, I talk about the fact that I have a mental health diagnosis. I am a person with lived experience with a mental health challenge, you know. And so there were certain doors that were, and tables and access to buildings that were blocked for me still, you know. And then we had the American with Disabilities Act in 1990 that opened up a few more doors for people who had challenges. So as I've been doing the work that I've been doing in the last 17 years, I've been invited to the system tables, the tables that make some of the rules, make some of the laws, set some of the policies. Okay. And such as Judge Brown Jackson, she's sitting at a table, you know, and she's sat at many tables. She sat at debate tables. She sat as a defense attorney at the table. She sat on the bench of the judge. So she sat at many of these tables in the midst of her journey. And my thought is, yes, we sat at those tables. And sometimes we even have our voices heard. But many times, often, our voices are not heard at those tables. And as I've been watching the confirmation hearings of last week, it just kept whirling and whirling and whirling in my head that here is another Black woman whose voice is not being heard, whose words are being twisted, whose actions have been criticized, almost just dissected into I can't even think of a good word to describe the attack that I've heard on this judge's work, on her words, on her decisions, on her choices. It's been challenged on so many levels. And I can't help but to think back, being that this is Women's History Month, and watching the senators, majority of them white, privileged males, attack this Black woman. And it makes me think back to the history of Black women in America, all the way back to slavery. Black women in America. Our voices have been not heard. When they stole our children and sold them on the auction block, our voices didn't matter. When you stole our husbands and our men and either sold them on the auction block or lynched them and hung them, our voices wasn't heard. When we were made to come into the master's house, multiple things took place, not all at the same time. Many of us were raped and violated by, again, white privileged males, and our voices weren't heard. We were made to breastfeed the children of the master's household, denying our own children nutrition. And our voices weren't heard. We were mistreated by the mistress of the house because, unfortunately, we had the attention of the white privileged master, which is something we didn't want, but we didn't have a voice there either. So as I'm looking at these confirmation hearings, and I'm thinking about my own voice not being heard at some of the tables, some of the system tables that I have sat at in the last 10 years, and my voice was not heard. We have been tokenized for far too long. For far, far too long. There is an order of culture in America, which flows real awkwardly. You have white privileged male at the top. That is the person or the people who are making the laws, who are the political leaders, who are the heads of the corporations, the CEOs of the corporations, the banks. They are the heads of so many different branches of our government. It's everywhere. Then the next person in power is the Caucasian females. And some of their privilege has allowed them to be called what has become a term lately, the Karen, which in slavery day, that would have been the mistress of the house who made sexual advances against the Black male slave, but then cried rape. Or made obscene accusations against the female house nigga, for the lack of a better term. And she was justified. She got into the victim role. She continued to be the victim. So we have some Karens, but then we have some that are not Karens. But they have the next highest power is the white Caucasian female. And there's, like I said, there's two ethnic groups of them as well. Break it down. You got your Karens, you know, and then you got your dominant, boisterous, leaders. And then you come down to, and again, Black people are starting to fall further and further down that pole. We have more people, and I don't like the word people of color. And I heard someone talk about the terminology Hispanic and Latinx, and they made so much sense. And they were from Dominican, and it made so much sense how we continue to label people. But people from a Mexican or Hispanic background, for the lack of better terminology, and people who are moving up that may have come from the Mediterranean regions, you know, they are moving up in power. Where again, the blacks are still having to fight and struggle for a place in a country that we built on our blood, sweat, and tears. Who picked the cotton? Who built the foundation, the plantations? You know, who ran the auto industry? Who made most of a lot of the music that we listen to and we hear? We have become further and further down that line. So then, after you have, like I say, lack of a better term, people of color, people that are descending from a Mexican or Spanish background, to our people that's coming from Lebanese and places like that, they're moving up. Then you have Black women. And finally, the sad part about it is our Black men are at the bottom. They are totally at the bottom. And that's sad that they have been stripped of all their power and all their dignity. And they have become tokenized. You know, so when they asked me to have seats at these tables, most people knew that I was smart. And most of them knew that I was quiet. And they thought that quiet meant that I would be passive. They also knew that I had a diagnosis of a mental condition. And for whatever reason, when people hear people with mental conditions, they automatically think that means you're slow, that your brain doesn't work. Load of crap. My brain works just fine. You know, it's not broken. I'm not slow. And sometimes I'm smarter than the people sitting at the table. But being a Black woman, brought about those labels and that stigma. And set me in a seat of tokenism. And I no longer, but that didn't last long. That didn't last long. You know? Because everybody wanted to check the box. Oh, she's Black, check. She's a woman, check. She has a disability, check. We've checked the boxes. We've done this. So let's just go business as usual. She's not going to be a problem. What they didn't know was that my direct, honest, and transparency was going to come across, making me a universal intersectionality advocate. That my direct, honest, transparency was mixed with integrity and pride. And as they continued to try to co-opt my values and what I believed in, the more I pushed. That was a little scary for some people. They saw it as a place of needing to figure out a way to get me out. And again, every attack of the enemy that came, it was formed, but it didn't prosper. Because I am a smart woman, I had already saw the steps that were being taken. And I had already countered with my own plan. So back to what I'm seeing. In our government right now, we have, and because of our laws are all screwy, and I heard mentioned that, you know, the way in the Constitution, it even states that Black people were 3/5 of human. How crappy is that? You know, and if you have a drop of, if you have any Negroid blood, you are considered Black. So we consider our Vice President, Kamala Harris, to be Black. She is, like so many of us Black people, multiracial. We have multi mingling of blood. But because she has that, I don't care how small of a degree, she is considered Black. And the sad part about it is, I really and truly, I have my love hate. I appreciate that we have a Black woman as our Vice President, but there were several things that I saw along the way that I truly, truly felt were questionable of your loyalty and integrity to the roots of Black people. Do I really see her as my Black sister? The next sad piece I see about it is she's been in office maybe 3 months. And I see her in a position, the sad part about it is them trying to compromise and co-opt her values and her thoughts and placing her in a position of tokenism. I'm not a big follower of the news. Our last previous president really got me to turn off the news. really got me to turn off the news. So, but I haven't heard, any major political things that Vice President Harris is doing or saying, or policies or anything that she's really backing or pushing. And the few times that I heard some slight things, it felt like it was so quickly hushed up. It was so quickly quieted. So again, that's kind of what I feel. And I seen a picture of her a couple of days ago standing at a podium, and she looked very frustrated. She looked very tired. She looked very worn out because she's fighting to have her voice heard. She's fighting to have her opinion, her ideas, her words heard, her words meaning something, her validation. Validation of her authority, validation of her intelligence and intellect, her value, her validation of being human, of being human. We as Black women, we have thrived. We have thrived through centuries of unjustness, of being devalued, of being disrespected, of being abused. Of being tokenized. Here we are again. And I'm looking at the Honorable Judge Brown Jackson. A beautiful Black woman. Being devalued. Being attacked with, for her words and her decisions and choices, that the Constitution guided her to make. And I'm hearing her having to defend herself in so many ways, and just being attacked. And I also see her a few times. I've seen her facial expressions, and I'm seeing the frustration. I'm seeing her suppress the stigma of the angry Black woman, because when we speak up for with integrity, and we advocate for ourselves and others, we do it with a lot of passion, because we have passion of generations and generations of generations. Our mothers, our grandmothers, our great grandmothers, our ancestors, that have been stuffed down in our DNA, that's bubbling up to be heard. So when we speak and we come with that advocacy, and the passion rises up, because that's another thing with Black people. We talk with our emotions. We talk with our emotions, our body language. We are always in motion. And I watch her, and she's learned to do it with poise, to try to bring that passion across where it doesn't look like she's an angry Black woman. I've danced that dance. I've done that dance. I've done that dance. You know, but sometimes my face gives me away. My facial expressions will give me away. Excuse my puppy down there for a snore, but he's always been a snorer. You know, so I hear her having to defend herself when they're taking her words out of context, when they're bringing half truths and twisting things. It's not okay. It's crap. But because they have the power, because we as voters give them the power, they can do this. They have done this. You know? So I look at our Black women leaders in this march of Women's History Month. And I see these universal advocates such as Kamala Harris, Stacey Abrams, Judge I said I was gonna learn her name, Judge Brown Jackson, taking down doors on buildings and trying to lead the conversations at tables that not only they belong with, they belong at these tables, but they were also created by the Creator for such a time as this. This has been a time of history where women are thriving, we are thriving, and the powers that has been are still trying to be the powers to be, and they are still trying to oppress us and tokenize us. My one concern and my one issue, and I'm going to get to that in a minute. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Back to each and every person on the planet has a purpose. We have a purpose. And because of my spiritual beliefs, we have a God-given purpose. You know? And when God calls you, He will equip you. We just have to stand firm. And at this state, for America to be so much more advanced, why is it taken to 2022 for Black women to get a seat in the White House? We're not the president. We don't even have a woman's president. So that goes to show you how patriarchal this crappy country is. We've never had even a woman president. Because everybody wants to downplay women as beneath, stupid, whatever. I don't know. I don't know what people think. But they will not. And I think that's out of fear. I think that's because we have proven that we can run a household, run a job, raise children, and do all kinds of multitasking all at the same time and be successful at it. So somewhere, some people are afraid that, women are just, we are superior. And I'm gonna go one further. Black women are even more superior because of all the things that we have endured and been passed down through our DNA. We are more than survivors. We have been crafted as superior because you couldn't kill us and you tried. Couldn't stop us, but you tried. So again, they're taking down the doors to these buildings, these systems, these institutions that has been plaguing America for hundreds of years. We have black women taking down those doors to the White House, hopefully to the Supreme Court. This will be the first woman, the first black woman. Yeah, they put their token black man in years ago. Clarence Thomas. Yeah, they put him in there. Yeah, okay. Right. But my word tells me that, yes, we've had these buildings, these systems, and there's been doors. But once he opens them, no one can shut them. My word also tells me that they're leading these conversations at the tables because the word says God will prepare the table for you in the presence of your enemies. So they're walking in purpose. They're working in divine time. I heard it say that, the Honorable Judge Brown Jackson was answering those questions at that table with grace. And she continued to keep her grace and honor because that table was prepared for her. So when I think about it, accessibility is being able to get in the building. We've had access, we've had access as slaves to get into the building. We were the cooks, we cleaned up, we were the master's play toys, we were the wet nurses, we were part of the building, we were the gardeners. So we have had accessibility to the buildings, to the system. So then they come up with this thing about, oh, we need to diversify. Oh, wow. Really? You realize that you got 20 people sitting here talking about things that relate to black people or Hispanic people or Asian people or indigenous people. And out of those 20 people, not one person representing those cultures are sitting at the table. And it's still like that. I was in a meeting the other day, and it was a government meeting. There was an hour to, again, it got us in the building and a seat at the table, and it gave us an opportunity to speak, from our different perspective offices or organizations that we are a part of. But then they went through the list of people that was on their team that was helping put this together. There was one black woman. She was the only person out of 12 people who are deciding stuff for a nation of people. There was no indigenous people, no Asian people, no Hispanic people. They were all Caucasian except for her. The hair on the back of my neck stood up. Because how are you making decisions for these people, for the people of the United States, when you don't look like me? So you don't know what my experience has been. You don't know what my culture has been through. You don't know what goes on in my neighborhood because you have not lived in it. Really? So again, we're hearing the word diversity. And it's, oh, we are diverse. We're diverse. We have this on our team. We have this on our team. I sit on about 5 different boards or committees. And again, here I am, the only Black face on there. And then I had to be, then I'm a woman. And I even add more diversity. Because I'm a felon. Yes, I have a prior conviction. But why do I have to be the Lone Ranger? Where's the diversity? So they're opening the doors and they're having a conversation at the table, but it's been slow moving. We're talking hundreds of years of slow movement. The Civil Rights Act was in 1964, 58 years ago. And we're just now getting to the point where we're getting to lead the tables or try to lead the table. We're trying, but they're pushing back. Pushback means we're doing something right. So the diversity comes in when we get invited to the table. We get invited so that they can be more diverse. Hey, Bronwyn, we really would like for you to sit on this board of directors. We really and truly need your expertise and your opinion and your lived experience around your mental health, around your incarceration, around being Black. Oh, really? Okay. So what you're telling me is this is your way of diversifying your board, your table. So here I am. Here I sit. Then the next thing is, hey, Bronwyn, what do you think about that? How does that sound to you? What are your thoughts on that? Oh, so now I'm included. Because now I have my voice being heard at these tables, on these boards, in these places. So, oh, check the box. Check the box. Check the box. We got Bronwyn at the table. So now we're diverse. Yes, she's Black. She has a mental health condition. She even has a felony. Yay! Okay. But then there's a piece that goes equity. Equity is a whole nother level, and those boxes are not getting checked in a lot of different areas for a lot of different women, and especially Black women or Hispanic women or Spanish Orient or indigenous. And that's when we feel like we belong at the table, because our voices are heard at the table. Then you know you truly belong when you are your words are validated and valued and utilized as a part of the process in the systems. I say a lot of things at a lot of these meetings. The sad part has been that my words have not been heard. But then when I have my white counterpart, a white female, or even a male, say identical words that I just said, it's the best idea in the world. And now they take it and run with it. And then they take it and they get the credit for it. Does that feel like validation? That feels like, here we go, all the way back to 400 years ago, when our people was brought over here from Africa and thrown into slavery. It feels like when some of us that were free in the 13 colonies became slaves or indentured servants. Or that feels like when we had Mr. Garrett invent something and it was stolen from him. When Edison stole the idea of the fermentation for the light bulb, it just goes on and on and on and on. All the things that Black people have created for centuries, the ironing board, the washing machine, the refrigerator, the lawnmower, the cotton picker, someone came along and took the idea and made it theirs and got rich. And that crap is still happening today. It's still happening today. So I'm praying for my sisters. As they lead these tables in this country. Because they have accessibility. They are bringing the diversity. They are being included. But do they truly belong? Are they truly getting equity in the conversation? My one thought, and what kind of rubs me with some of my Black women leaders are, what's wrong with our Black men? What has happened in our culture that we no longer respect our Black men? They have become so far down in this human race, and we continue as Black women, as we move up, to overshadow them and push them even further down. And as I'm looking at the women who are at the table, their partners of choice are not Black men. When I lived in Portland, Oregon, I looked at the Black men out there, and in order to try to get ahead or survive in the Portland area, their partners of choice were not Black women. That hurts. I have black sons. One of them is deceased. He was murdered at 21. Because he was homeless on the street with a mental health diagnosis. And I was in prison, sad to say. However, it would hurt my heart that if my son devalued black women so much that he decided that his life partner would be Caucasian. And that bothers me because you were raised by a black woman. You have a black sister. You have a black grandmother and great grandmother. And for so many generations, these were a set of people who are still to this day teaching and making us be beneath them. You know, beneath them. You know, they still have more power over us. They haven't learned to power with us. Yeah, you see my big old baby. I don't know what he's trying to tell me, but he's trying to tell me something. I tried to take him out a little while ago, but he didn't want to go. So now he wants to get up here, and I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to try to finish this out. So that bothers me. And it bothers me to think that, and it was hard for me to choose because I tried to date outside, but I felt like they talked down at me. They talked to me again like I was stupid and I was beneath them. You know, I had a father. How is that honoring my father? How is that honoring my brothers? How is that to me to say that my life partner, a descendant of our oppressors, is who I choose over someone that looks like the person that gave me life, the person who taught me the values, the person who gave me the strength and the knowledge, who provided for me as a child, you know, who worked hard and struggled to keep his dignity in a world where he was not accepted, where he was marginalized. How does that look? How does that feel? How would that feel? Doesn't feel good, especially being a mother of black sons. I don't think it would feel good for me. But anyway, so with all the things that I have accomplished and that I see these black women have accomplished has come from years of death, transformation, and rebirth. Death of ideas, goals, plans, and even all the people who came before me or us. Transformations of beliefs, behaviors by becoming in tune and self-aware, as well as approaching the table with fresh perspective and knowledge of who was at the table, all the while remembering what we brought to the table. You know, again, we've had to transform our behaviors, our beliefs. Like I said, I talked about how I watched her trying to maintain her passion and walk in the grace and dignity that they think she should have so that she doesn't look like an angry black woman. But again, as we approach these tables, continue to bring your fresh perspective, your perspective, your knowledge. And remember who's sitting at the table. Remember who prepared the table. And remember who's giving you the authority and the power. It's not them. It's not them. It's the God within you. So as I move forward in my journey, I gather all the tools from my rebirth and all the skills, and I've made them into gems, because they're gems, they're precious stones to me. And I know that I can continue to do better with the knowledge and the growth that I've gained. Just like I believe that these women that who are taking down these doors, who are leading these conversations, will continue to move us forward in history. But as people hear this and listen to this, I would hope that we, as Black people, as Black women, continue to remember where we came from, where we want to go, and how we're going to get there. There are a lot of good Black men out here. They haven't always had the best role models. They haven't always had the best support. And many of us have raised kids on our own. I was one of them. My mother was one of them. But again, we have to look at the racial trauma that is embedded in our DNA. We have to look at the learned behavior of being ripped away from your family time and time again. Time and time again. Not only in slavery, but in the 60s when people were getting assistance from the government and they were getting what they call welfare. Husband couldn't live in the house. He didn't make enough money to provide for his family. He was very marginalized. So if the woman was getting state assistance, the man had to move out. That was another thing that kept causing separations. And then because men were so marginalized and couldn't make enough to try to take care of their families, they also went off into illegal stuff to try to fend for their families, fend for themselves, survival. And then that sent them to prison. So we got a large number of Black men in prison, or Hispanic men in prison. Those are two highest populations because that's the way the system is set up. And then here we are, mothers, daughters, Black women who turn our way against marginalized communities of Black men. I'm preaching to the choir. Like I said, I've not been able to establish a good relationship with someone outside of my ethnic background because they don't get me. They don't get it. They have not lived the life I lived. They've not lived marginalized like I've lived. They've not experienced what I've experienced. And my son said it to me, and it made so much sense. He was like, "Mom, you have a street knowledge, but then you also have academic knowledge. So either you're going to meet a man who's academic, who can't relate to your street knowledge, or you're going to meet a man that's streetwise that can't match you on an academic professional level." And it was like, whoa, that made so much sense. How do I find the balance?
How do we find the balance? As Black women, we continue to thrive. But how are we bringing our community and our marginalized partners and children, bringing that up and through them so that they can thrive and succeed, so they can continue to take down the doors on these buildings, continue to lead the conversations at these tables, continue to belong there, to rule there, to reign there as kings and queens that we are. I've been putting this off for a few days, and I've been thinking about it a few days. And again, it's time. It's Women's History Month. Continue to make history throughout the year. Continue to thrive. Continue to grow. Continue to smile. And continue to hold on to your passion. Don't let nobody put it down. And again, this is Bronwyn with Voice to the Voiceless, coming from 313 Network Solutions. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday afternoon.